There you go. Okay, gentlemen, this morning I actually want to speak about a topic that has to do with the parsha of the week, parsha's Beshalach. It has to also do with the parsha that we just went through, parsha's Bo. And that is, of course, the issue of not holding a grudge, as we say in the top of the source sheet. I would say that one of the hardest midot that we have to work on is exactly this one. Because each and every one of us in life, in some way or another, was hurt, either physically, mentally, or emotionally, by someone. If we're sitting in Israel, we all know that Israel as a country doesn't always, I would say, benefit with its citizens, especially when you stand online in any of the governmental offices. And you feel sometimes that people are out to get you. And if they did get you, usually you have one thing in mind. One thing that crosses your mind, maybe even day in and day out.
Get him back.
Get him back.
Double, triple.
Double and triple. How do I get him back? A guy embarrassed me in public. Someone took money from me and stole it and never gave it back. I invested money with someone like Madoff, and we all know what happened with him. How do I get him back? And this is a very hard midah to work on.
I'd rather just get the money back.
But let's say it wasn't money. Bruce, let's say it was your emotions. The guy embarrassed you in public. The guy, spoke against you from the pulpit. This is something that crosses your mind, sometimes day in and day out. And what's interesting to me is, in my opinion, this is exactly what we see in the Torah. God is sensitive to it, and God tries to mitigate the problem. Look at the source sheet. As you all know, God had a master plan. He had a vision. For some reason or another, his vision was, we're going to be enslaved for 400 years, and we're going to be taken out of the enslavement. I don't know why, but that was his master plan. And he presents this plan long before it happened to who? To Abraham. Top of the source sheet, Bereshit Perek Tetvav. You could see there the famous Brit Ben Abetarim, the famous covenant between the pieces, in which God says, I'm going to enslave them, I'm going to take them out, I'm going to punish the people that enslave them. But then God adds in a certain detail. Look at the detail. Pasuk Yud Dalet. And don't worry, just like the Jewish people will suffer, I will make the people that enslave them suffer, and I will punish them.
Sounds like a grudge.
And you, Jewish people, will leave not empty-handed. One question on this verse. What's the question? Suppose I told you an extraordinary story. I went to meet a very important man. I got a huge donation for the kollel. We went to the coffee. I met him in a coffee shop. We spoke for an hour, and I got him a great donation. Would you think if I told you this story, which I should, because this is important to know?
Is it true?
No. But suppose it was. If I would tell you this story, do you think it would be important to me to add in, oh, you know what I ordered? I ordered a piece of cake, but without the whipped cream, because I'm trying to keep my figure. What does that have to do with the flow? What does that have to do with the story?
Right.
It's like saying, one day I came into the house and I spilled some coffee on myself, so I had to change my suit. Oh, by the way, I have to send my suit to the cleaners. What does that have to do with the flow of the story? And what's interesting is, Bruce, this happens again. Fast forward in history. Moshe, standing by the burning bush. Right? God is now giving a little more details than he gave to Abraham because it's happening already. Moshe is going to see what's going to happen to the Jewish people. He's standing in it. What does it say? Shmot Perek Gimel. God gives again the master plan. It says that he's going to enslave the people, and v'ani yadati ki lo yiten etchem melech Mitzrayim lahaloch v'yob v'yad chazaka, and I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go. And I'm going to get Egypt, and I'm going to punish them, and everything, and everything. But the Mitzrayim will like the Jewish people. When you leave, you won't leave empty-handed. That's one pasuk. Second pasuk. And the Jewish people are going to go, a woman to a woman, a man to a man, they're going to ask for handouts, they're going to get the handouts, and they're not going to live empty-handed. Terrible, huh? What our enemies can do with these psukim. But gentlemen, is this important at this point to tell Moshe? It's like what I ordered at the coffee shop in the important meeting. It's like telling you I sent my clothes to the cleaners because they got dirty. What does this have to do with the story? Look at the story. God doesn't say which makot he's going to bring. He just says, I'm going to punish the Jewish, the Mitzri. In general, Moshe, you should know Paro's not going to let them go, and I'm going to punish them. That's the vision. You should know what you're going into. But then he adds in a detail, a specific detail.
It's going to be two sides of the same coin. The Egyptians are going to be punished, and you're going to be rewarded
for
whatever you underwent. I mean,
okay.
It's like Janus. Looking forward, looking back.
You're saying you're going to, just like the Egyptians are going to get punished, you're going to get rewarded. Two sides of the same coin.
Let's say there was slavery. The Egyptians are going to be punished for it, and you're going to be somehow... You want to use your term
could very well be
reimbursed for it.
That could very well. Oh, well, you're saying two different things here. You're saying rewarded, but then you're saying punished.
Well, for the different people.
Reimbursement.
The people, let's say, who benefited from the slavery,
reparations.
If you're a slave, if you're sent away for, I don't know, let's say you're a businessman, in 10 years you're going to be knocked out of your box and in jail. So when you get out, you know the loss you took for those 10 years. Don't worry.
We're going to take care of it. Exactly. But that, I absolutely agree with what you said. They're going to get reimbursed for their enslavement. They should be paid wages for their hard work. My question, though, is a little different. Why mention it in such detail? There's many things that happened when they left Mitzrayim. For example, the matzah that we have to suffer through for 7 days. Doesn't say a word here that that's going to happen, that they're going to be sent out so fast that they're not going to be able to bake their bread. But the pasuk here, and with Avraham, has to let us know, by the way, when you leave, you're going to leave not empty-handed. That was to Avraham. With Moshe, we add on more details. God doesn't say all the details about everything else, but with regard to this, look at this. Two psukim, and the second pasuk even tells you which currency they're going to take. Klei kesef, klei zahav, smalot, they're going to have clothing,
it focuses during the plague of darkness, the midway they went to... They had like
that's the next verse. Look at the next verse.
Midrash.
Exactly.
It emphasizes the story.
But look, next verse. We spent it this Shabbos. That's exactly it. It's even more surprising. God says to Moshe, Moshe now has been going to Paro each time. This has been an eighth time, and after the eighth time, Paro says to him, what? Don't come back to see me. The day you're going to see me, you're going to die. I'll kill you. ויום השם למשה, עוד נגע אחד אבי על פרעה ומצרים ואחריכם, ישלח אתכם מזה, כשלחו קלה גרש, יגרש אתכם מזה. Don't worry, one more. Right? We all know that one more worked. Okay. Moshe knows this is what's going to happen. He doesn't know which. He doesn't know how it's going to happen. But then again, two psukim. דבר נבוז נעם. וישאלו איש מאת רעהו, וישא מאת רותה, כלי חסף, כלי זהב. ויתן השם את חן העם בעיני מצרים. Again, there's such detail about the money they're going to get. And as you mentioned, what our enemies can do with this about the anti-Semitic remarks about the Jews is amazing. Every single time the master plan is presented to either Abraham or to Moshe, God makes sure to detail the money they're going to get.
And this money is going to be a problem for them later.
Well, you got it.
Wait. I just shop this and it may not be a problem. You think of the golden calf, that was part of it, but where did all this stuff from the Mishkan come from?
Exactly.
I mean, they didn't find
I'm not saying it's a bad idea to have money in your pockets. I'm saying, why detail it? I mean, the Torah doesn't waste words. That's what we were taught in day school. And if the Torah doesn't waste words, the Torah is a beautiful, rhetoric piece of work. It weighs every word. Why detail each time this? When you don't detail other things. Makot Bechorot was pretty important. I mean, let's just think about this. Because of Makot Bechorot, the Jewish people were let out. Why? Because Paro didn't have a big brother. If Paro had a big brother, I don't know if they would be let out. Because Paro didn't have a big brother, they were let out.
Well, he would have been.
Makot Bechorot gives us the whole halachos of Pidgin Aben and Petach Hamor and all everything else. Pretty important stuff. I don't see any details. Well, no, it happened later. Torah's weighing its words, giving you the general idea, and you'll see what happens later. But with regard to the money, it dafka again and again. And what's even more surprising, why do you tell Avraham about it? So many years ago. Moshe's at the snake, doesn't even know about the makot yet. Never met this guy, never even approached Paro yet, and you tell him about the money.
But, you know, it can be a reassurance. You know, you tell a guy like the slave that goes free after 7 years, 6 years, in the seventh year. If you toss him out and says, fine, you're free. You have that in the United States. Hey, you have that in New York in Willowbrook. Remember when they had the psychiatric hospital? Willowbrook?
I think you're absolutely
right.
They
took everybody. They said, you're free. Gagism. That happened in the South after you had the freeing of the slaves. Just to free somebody.
The
but
bottom line is,
pocket,
I think what you're saying, you're right.
May not be,
but I want to sharpen your point. I want to sharpen your point.
It makes it tolerable somewhat during all that oppression.
To
know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. That's what God's given.
But this is the light, I think, should have been, if what you're saying is correct, then the light should have been, you're going to leave. Right. I'm going to take care of you. But what does the money have to do? So let me, I think what you're saying is all correct, and I want to sharpen what you're saying. In my humble opinion, I'm not the first that said this, but I couldn't pinpoint who said it.
You won't be the last.
And I won't be the last that said it, but in my humble opinion, this whole episode is to tell the Jewish people, when I let you out, I'm not only going to make sure that you're going to be enslaved, and I'm not only going to make sure that you're going to be taken out, I'm going to make sure to take care of you the day later by ensuring that you won't hold a grudge against Egypt. Why? Because if you do, you'll never be free. All you think about day in and day out is, how do I get back my Egyptian master that totally and utterly tortured me for all these years and tortured my ancestors? That's all I'll think about, because we're human beings.
So we get war reparations, would do a good job with...
I'm not saying not, but I'm saying all you would think about constantly on a consistent basis is, how do I get them back? Now, this doesn't mean...
Look how controversial the war reparations from Germany was.
Yeah, but I'm going to get to that. You're right.
That guy gives you $1,000.
You're right. I'm not saying that... No. So let me finish what I'm saying. In my opinion, God says to Abraham and to Moshe, this is the master plan. I'm not wasting words here. The master plan is, I'm going to enslave them. Second phase, I'm going to let them out. Third phase, I'm going to take care of them the day later by ensuring that they won't hold a grudge. What's the means to the end? Making sure they have money in their pocket. But not just money in their pocket. Money in their pocket would mean God will ensure that they will have money to go on, like you said. But how is it done? Look at the psukim. It's not just that they'll have money in their pocket miraculously, or when they get to Kriyat Yamsuf, all the money will wash up on the shore and they'll take it.
They're
going to ask for it.
And the people are going to give it.
The same master of Egypt that enslaved you and tortured you has to give you the money. That's what God says to Moshe in Perek Gimel. That's what God says in Perek Yud Aleph. V'yishalu ish me'et re'eyu. Don't go get it when they're not looking. Don't steal it, even though it belongs to you after all. You work, you deserve reimbursement. Take it, let make sure you ask for it, because then, true, you will have terrible memories, but you won't hold a grudge. Now, you mentioned the reparations. No one, God forbid, is saying that by getting the money in their pocket, they're going to forget what they went through in Egypt. It will be very hard for a Jew to forget what happened in Egypt. Any of us sitting here...
How many times do we say Yitzhak Mitzrayim?
There you go. Let's go through it. We say once or twice a day in Kriyat Shema, the mitzvah, the oraisa of Schirat Yitzirat Mitzrayim. Okay? We have a mitzvah to say it daily. We have mitzvot that remind us, albeit indirectly, of Yitzias Mitzrayim, like tefillin.
Every holiday.
All the holidays. Once a year, we make a festival beyond belief in which the whole night, the Arba Kosot, and leaning is all for one reason. Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo keilu hu yatza me Mitzrayim. We even say a spontaneous halal as if we got out of Mitzrayim that night. So I think it would be a pretty good trick to pull to try to forget Egypt. We don't forget what we went through. Not the enslavement, and of course not the redeemment from Egypt. But on the other hand, God says, in order for you to build the Jewish nation, you can't hold a grudge. Because holding a grudge will stop you in your tracks, because all you think about is one thing. How do I get back at them? How do I get back at them? How do I get back at them? And when you think about that daily, A, you won't get back at them. Because how are you supposed to do exactly what he did to you? If someone took money from you, invested it, and stole it, you're going to be able to take his money, invest it, and steal it? I mean, it's impossible to ever get back at someone properly. You'll never feel satisfied. So God's basically giving a master plan here. I'm going to enslave them, take them out, and take care of them the day later, so psychologically they'll be able to rebuild the Jewish nation without holding this terrible grudge in their hearts, albeit not forgetting what they went through, but not holding a grudge. Yes, Bruce?
Why does it always emphasize that they borrow the money? Why don't they just up front give us the money?
I don't know if the word v'yishalu in biblical Hebrew necessarily means what it means in rabbinic Hebrew.
Yeah, so that'd be a good answer if that's true.
We have to check.
What would it mean?
It means yishalu means you ask and they give
request,
it to you.
A request.
Can I please have money? And the Egyptians give it. That's what I think it means. Now, what's interesting to me is that this particular notion came true to me. I just met a woman. It was 2 years ago. Unfortunately, she's no longer alive. And we knew her our whole life.
Unfortunately
she passed away in good health. Baruch Hashem. No, I fortunately knew the woman, and unfortunately she passed away 2 years ago. These two words are too close to each other. Yeah. Not good. All right, we have to retell the story. I was fortunate to know a woman, a wonderful woman. And unfortunately, she just passed away recently. And she told me a story that I heard twice before, but I don't like quoting stories unless I know they're true. Because there's a lot of Hasidic stories out there, I'm using the generic term, that are probably about as true as me flying to the moon today. So I try to not quote stories unless I know they're true. And the story is as follows. It's already written up. There was a great rabbinic leader in America who was originally from Lithuania, came to America and rabbinated in America. Rabbi Eliezer Silver. You heard of him?
Harrisburg
and later on in Cincinnati. You're right. Rabbi Eliezer Silver was a Talmud Chacham. When he was in Harrisburg, he basically didn't have too many duties. He sat every morning and learned. According to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the father of the Rav Soloveitchik of our generation, he knew every Tosfos Baal Peh. The story is told him, Rav Soloveitchik came to America, he gave a shir, and his father warned him, he said, you're going to come into a room and you're going to see great Rabbanim, Mitlan Gabur, they're going to sit there with long beards and their bekeshers. I promise you, they don't remember a thing. They didn't learn since they came to America. Anything they know is from Europe, except for one man who's going to sit in the back with a cylinder on his head. How do you say cylinder? A top hat. Be careful of this guy. He knows every Tosfot Baal Peh, and that's Rav Eliezer Silver, great rabbinic leader in America, and a knocker, a rabbinic leader and a knocker. He was once stopped by a cop. Yeah. The story is told. You heard the story? Okay. Let's say that we won't repeat it. It's worth telling. He was a knocker. He has a good sense of humor. Rabbis have to have sense of humor. He was stopped. He was running to a meeting and the taxi cab was driving very fast and he was stopped by a cop in New York. The taxi cab driver tells the cop, you know who I have in the back of the car? The cab driver, so the cop says, who? I have the chief rabbi of America. Rabbi Yosef rolls down the window and says, and Canada. That's Rav Eliezer Silver. Anyway, after the war, he was allowed by the American government to wear the soldier uniform of the American soldier, and he sewed into his pockets $100,000 to give out to the Nitzolim, to give out to those that survived the Holocaust in the DP camps. And he went around the DP camps, and he's a Lithuanian Jew, so he knew Yiddish, he knew how to talk to them. And each time he gave money to the Nitzolim, he said, on one condition, that you remarry. This woman told me she was one of these people that got money from him. And she said, how can I remarry? Right before the war, I was in the ghetto, I got married. I had a son. I was married to the son of the rabbi of the city, prestigious shidduch. And one day they told me the Gestapo's coming in, and they're looking for women with babies, probably to kill them. Run away for a few days, we'll take care of the baby. She ran into the forest for a few days. She came back, and you all know what probably happened. Her husband was killed, the baby was killed, her whole family was wiped out. She survived the Holocaust. Never saw the baby again. According to what she said, the baby was 2 days old at that time. After the war, she tells Rabbi Eliezer Silver, how do you want me to remarry? What the Nazis did to me. And he told her, no, you have to remarry, and this is the money I'm giving you. So I asked her, the money in your pocket allowed you to remarry? And she said, yes. I didn't forget what I went through, God forbid. But on the other hand, I didn't, on the other hand, hold a grudge, and all I thought about all day is how am I going to get back at them. I was able to go further and to remarry and to build a family.
Move on. Seems extremely shallow.
It seems artificial. But the fact that she left Europe not empty-handed and she was able to get, in this case, to Montreal, and she was able to rebuild a family, and she ended her life with 20 grandchildren, all of them Shomer Shabbos. She said, the fact that he told me, no, you must remarry, gave her the power to go on. And that's what I think is happening here. When you hold a grudge, you can't go on, because all you think about day in and day out is, how do I get back at the person that got me? I know someone, many people now, unfortunately, are out of work because of the financial situation. Now, these are hard workers. They were wonderful people. And just because of the financial situation, they were laid off. You don't know how upset they are. But it's a difference between you take a guy who's upset because he got laid off and a person that's upset that he got laid off, but albeit he got some compensation in his pocket for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 months to hold him over. Now, in 5 months' time, he may not have a job. But on the other hand, it's a different feeling.
It's just a delayed grudge.
I don't know if it's a grudge. I don't think it's going to be a delayed grudge.
We're told over and over to remember.
The Egyptians were.
It is a bit of a grudge. We're told conflict.
We have to remember. God forbid not to forget.
Well, that
but on the other hand, not to hold a grudge.
We're not holding a grudge against Egypt. We're remembering God, not Egypt. I think the remembrance is not focusing.
I think it's both. No, I think that it's to remember what the Egyptians did to us. Therefore, there's an Isser in the Torah not to go back to Egypt, to remember God taking us out as well.
Yeah, but that's two different remembrances.
Correct.
And the one that we always say is Zechel Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
But we also have the halacha on the night of the Seder, Matchil Begnut, Umesayem Beshvach, once a year. Once a year. Okay. So we don't have a mitzvah not to forget.
What are you saying, Kiddush? What are you saying, Kiddush?
Yitzias Mitzrayim, absolutely.
It's also a low, what I see is a low level of emuna and bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling you to master plan, and he's saying, I'm going to utilize the Egyptians to do this to you, then how can you hold a grudge? They're just the Yad Hashem.
Yes and no. That question, I'll say yes and no. That question was asked by many. It's an excellent question. If they're just doing what God wants, how can you blame the Egyptians?
And the
answer is,
the
answer many give is, God said to enslave the Jewish people, but he didn't say to torture them.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't say to enjoy it.
In other words, put it this way. If God says to do something, you don't have to do it with Lamahadrin. You can do it with Kodesh.
Yeah, no, I've heard that, but still, yeah. I mean...
What do you expect to be a nice slave?
Yeah, I mean, holding a grudge to something that's part of the master plan, it had to happen.
You're right, it had to happen, but God has to be responsible for his master plans. And God says, I'm going to be responsible. When you leave Egypt, you're not going to leave empty-handed. On the one hand, you're never going to forget what they did. We have so many mitzvah that make it impossible. But on the other hand, if you hold this grudge, you're not going to go further, because all you think about day in and day out is, what? How do I get back at them?
Right.
You won't want to get married. You won't want to build families. You won't want to do nothing. All you want to think about is get back at these Egyptians, what they made me do every day. Remember the famous Medrash? They made a woman do a man's work, a man do a woman's work. I'm going to get back at them.
I'm not sure.
You can't live. Now, did it work?
And
let's just think a second. Before we go on, did it work? Did it work? Did the Jews hold a grudge against the Egyptians?
I think we still hate the Egyptians. What do you mean?
Demtumen, did it work? This week's Parsha. Parsha's B'Shalach. Did it work?
Pasuk. They were so happy when you saw them dead, right?
No. Gentlemen, I want to ask you a very simple question. How many times in our Holy Torah did the Jews, tortured, enslaved in Egypt, beg Moshe to do what? Let's go back to Egypt.
There's a couple of nudges.
I never understood.
Yeah, because all the bad guys died at Yamsuf.
These are a couple of nudges.
Edward G. Robinson, if he kept his mouth shut.
All the bad guys died at Yamsuf, right?
Yeah.
This week's Parsha, Parsha's B'Shalach, before the bad guys died, they're running after the Jews. The Jews are at Yam Suf on the one hand, the Egyptians are closing in on them on the back.
Right,
what do the Jews say?
Because they thought they were
going to
die.
Why'd you take us out of Egypt? That's a good claim. That's good. Why'd you take us out of Egypt? Look, the Egyptians are mad at us now. Next pasuk. What did he tell you in Egypt? What did we tell you? Leave us alone. Chadam imenu. Then avdat mitzrayim. And we'll continue to work for Egypt. In my opinion, it worked too well. It worked too good. They didn't hold the grudge. They had no problem to go back to be enslaved by these Egyptians. Well, right in the back of them. Maybe some of them they recognized.
Well, faced with death.
Could be.
But they broke out of the salt of the seashore.
Could be. But let me ask you a question. Death versus being enslaved again. And then let's remind ourselves here, not just enslaved again. These are Egyptians,
right,
who are extremely upset right
these
now.
These are not Masada Jews. These are the cooperative, collaborating.
What does holding a grudge mean, really?
Holding a grudge, in my opinion, means that day in and day out, you think about how to get back at the people that got you. That's what I mean by holding a grudge.
This is an old question. When it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that we don't take Nekama on our enemies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that Hashem Yikam.
That's right.
So what does that concept mean?
It's a very hard question to answer just in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But in a word, Nekama, in my opinion, is a concept that means more of a punishment than it means getting back at someone. Or it means ensuring the endurance of the Jewish nation by the fact that our enemies won't think they can always hurt us without getting hurt themselves.
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily mean getting back at someone because he did it to you. And we have a mitzvah, lo tikom velo titor. You can't go ahead and revenge someone just because he did wrongdoing to you.
This way, not the Jew. Right?
Yeah. In this case, though, holding a grudge is even worse, and that is, you know you can't get back at them. They're dead. But all you think about all day is, oh, I wish I could.
But the Torah gives us a mitzvah.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that he's the one who's going to take nekama. Shouldn't we have solace? Shouldn't we just accept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of the problem?
Yes, we should accept it, but I think it's very hard to just live with that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's yes. We have to accept God will punish the Egyptians, will take care of us. But on the other hand, it's human nature to very easily say, listen, I want to get back at this person.
But you see, if you take a look at the Holocaust...
I was going to say, take that to the Holocaust.
You know, it was like one or two people that actually dedicated their lives to getting back at the Nazis.
It wasn't just one or two people.
Simon Wiesenthal and
yeah, that's what you hear. There was once a program on TV, I never knew about it myself, of people after the Holocaust that spent the first 3-4 years after the Holocaust just killing Nazis. Killing them, taking them, finding them,
right,
killing them.
A,
I'm not saying I don't blame him, of course.
Really,
what I'm trying to say is,
more of
what was more important to the Jewish people? To hunt the Nazis down, to find them, and to kill them? Or to rebuild their families, to rebuild the Jewish nation? Some of us, I'm sure, are descendants of Holocaust survivors. And that's what I think God is saying. Look, the Egyptians deserve punishment? Absolutely. Am I going to punish them? Yes. Are you going to think about it day in and day out? That's a human nature. Let me help you. When you left Egypt, that night, these terrible Egyptians gave you money. Not because I made them. You went to them. You said, can I have some compensation for my hard work? And they said, sure. And they gave it to you. That mitigated the problem a bit. Enough to hold them over to rebuild themselves when they left Egypt. So what I'm trying to claim here is that God had a master plan that I never understood to enslave the Jewish people. But God made sure that A, he will take us out. B, he will punish the Egyptians for what they did to us. Could be because they enslaved us too hard, not just because they were doing God's will. And C, take care of us the day later. The day later, after we left Egypt, God wanted to make sure we have the ability to rebuild. And the only way we'll have that ability is if we ask the Egyptians for money and they'll give it to us. Now, we will still have bad feelings. We will still feel the pain, physical and emotional, of what they did to us. We will have a mitzvah to remember it every single day and once a year in a very big way, but it will be enough to hold us over to give us the power to rebuild the Jewish people. Again, David, I take what you said, before. It's shallow to think money in your pocket, you forget everything. It's not true. You don't forget. God's telling us not to forget.
It mitigates, maybe.
It mitigates the problem enough, as I said, to hold you over.
We even have a mitzvah not to go back to Egypt. It's
correct.
Like, if there'd be no grudge,
correct.
Clean slate.
We have a mitzvah.
No clean slate in Egypt.
No clean slate. I'm not claiming.
It
can't be a clean slate, Bruce. We have so many mitzvot that remind us of Egypt. It can't be a clean slate.
Historically, it's repeated.
Ask a little girl, 4 years old, mitz, I bet you she'll be able to finish the sentence for you. And because we think about it every day, we think about it once a year, mitz ra, she'll be able to say
it. Just read a haftarah about the destruction of Egypt. You all say, ah, now they'll get theirs. It's kind of like...
You're right, they will get
it. Really,
I'm saying enough to hold you over.
Yeah,
enough not to think about it every single day. As I said, If a person, God forbid, is deported from a country, but he has money in his pocket, it's going to be very hard to rebuild his life. But the money in his pocket will give him the ability to start thinking about rebuilding his life, to make plans, and on the other hand, not to only make plans to do what?
To
get back at the country that deported him.
My codes weren't enough, and the slavery stopped for a year before he has to try. Seeing him being tortured with... frogs, blood,
and his son,
everything,
that's
not enough.
He's very depressed.
I'll tell you, yes, in the movie he's depressed. Yes, it does give, it does help.
Money solves.
But I'll tell you, human nature is, human nature is as follows. Human nature, I think, is that it's not enough that the person that got me is hurting, I have to hurt him.
It's kind of like,
but getting money from him, I saw it more always as God is building a nation. The nation has to go through the Kor HaBazel of Egypt, come out of there. And then you need economic sustenance. So
what if I meant the Mishkan? The Jews donated the Mishkan.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I'm just saying that money also helped in another way.
I would hold a grudge even if a guy paid me. What's that? It's not, he's not going to pay me off for...
Even if you held a grudge, it has to be a grudge that's small enough that you'll be able to not think about it on a daily basis. Because what I'm worried about is that if you think about a grudge on a daily basis... That's all you're going to think about.
Well, because we weren't affected.
It's more important for me, for you to find a new home if you were deported from your former home than it is to hold a grudge against your former landlord. Now, will you hold a grudge? I'm sure you will. But it has to be small enough that you'll be able to look for another place to put a roof over your family.